Brother had known about these parts of the citadel only by hearsay. Brother Numrod had never seen them either. Although he had not been specifically included in the summons, he had come nevertheless, fussing importantly around Brother as two sturdy novices carried him in a kind of sedan chair normally used by the more crumbling of the senior clerics. In the centre of the citadel, behind the temple, was a walled garden. Brother looked at it with an expert eye. There wasn't an inch of natural soil on the bare rock. Every spadeful that these shady trees grew in must have been carried up by hand. Vorbis was there, surrounded by bishops and EMs. He looked round as Brother approached.
"Ah, my desert companion," he said amiably. "And Brother Numrod, I believe. My brothers, I should like you to know that I have it in mind to raise our brother to archbishophood."
There was a very faint murmur of astonishment from the clerics, and then a clearing of a throat. Vorbis looked at Bishop Treem, who was the citadel's archivist.
"Well, technically, he is not yet even ordained," said Bishop Treem doubtfully. "But of course we all know there has been a precedent."
"Ossory's ass," said Brother Numrod promptly.
He put his hand over his mouth and went red with shame and embarrassment. Vorbis smiled.
"Good Brother Numrod is correct," he said. "Who had not also been ordained unless the qualifications were somewhat relaxed in those days?"
There was a chorus of nervous laughs, such as there always is from people who owe their jobs and possibly their lives to a whim of the person who has just cracked the not very amusing line.
"Although the donkey was only made a bishop," said Bishop Deathwish Treem.
"A role for which it was highly qualified," said Vorbis sharply. "And now you will all leave, including Subdeacon Numrod," he added.
Numrod went from red to white at this sudden preferment.
"But Archbishop Brother will remain. We wish to talk."
The clergy withdrew. Vorbis sat down on a stone chair under an elder tree. It was huge and ancient, quite unlike its short-lived relatives outside the garden, and its berries were ripening. The prophet sat with his elbows on the stone arms of the chair, his hands interlocked in front of him, and gave Brother a long, slow stare.
"You are recovered?" he said eventually.
"Yes, Lord," said Brother.
"But, Lord, I cannot be a bishop. I cannot even..."
"I assure you the job does not require much intelligence," said Vorbis. "If it did, bishops would not be able to do it."
There was another long silence. When Vorbis next spoke, it was as if every word was being winched up from a great depth.
"We spoke once, did we not, of the nature of reality?"
"Yes."
"And about how often what is perceived is not that which is fundamentally true?"
"Yes." Another pause. High overhead, an eagle circled, looking for tortoises.
"I am sure you have confused memories of our wanderings in the wilderness."
"No,
it is only to be expected.
The sun, the thirst, the hunger." "No, Lord, my memory does not confuse readily."
"Oh, yes, I recall."
"So do I, Lord." Vorbis turned his head slightly, looking sidelong at Brother, as if he was trying to hide behind his own face.
"In the desert, the great god Om spoke to me."
"Yes, Lord, he did, every day."
"You have a mighty, if simple, faith, Brother. When it comes to people, I am a great judge."
"Yes, Lord."
"Lord?"
"Yes, my Brother."
"Numrod said you led me through the desert, Lord."
"Remember what I said about fundamental truth, Brother? Of course you do. There was a physical desert indeed, but also a desert of the soul. My God led me, and I led you."
"Ah, yes, I see."
Overhead, the spiralling dot that was the eagle appeared to hang motionless in the air for a moment. Then it folded its wings and fell.
Much was given to me in the desert, brother. Much was learned. Now I must tell the world that is the duty of a prophet, to go where others have not been and bring back the truth of it.
Faster than the wind, its whole brain and body existing only as a mist around the sheer intensity of its purpose.
I did not expect it to be this soon, but Om guided my steps, and now that we have the Cenobiachi, we shall make use of it.
Somewhere out on the hillside, the eagle swooped, picked something up, and strove for height.
I'm just a novice, Lord Vorbis. I am not a bishop, even if everyone calls me one.
You'll get used to it.
It sometimes took a long time for an idea to form in Brother's mind, but one was forming now. It was something about the way Vorbis was sitting, something about the edge in his voice. Vorbis was afraid of him.
Why me?
Because of the desert? Who would care?
For all I know, it was always like this.
Probably it was Ossory's ass that carried him in the wilderness, who found the water, who kicked a lion to death.
Because of Ephib? Who would listen? Who would care?
He is the prophet and the Cenobiarch. He could have me killed just like that. Anything he does is right. Anything he says is true. Fundamentally true.
I have something to show you that may amuse you, said Vorbis, standing up.
Can you walk?
Oh, yes. Numrod was just being kind. It's mainly sunburn.
As they moved away, Brother saw something he hadn't noticed before. There were members of the Holy Guard armed with bows in the garden. They were in the shade of trees or amongst bushes, not too obvious, but not exactly hidden. Steps led from the garden to the maze of underground tunnels and rooms that underlay the temple, and indeed the whole of the citadel. Noiselessly, a couple of guards fell in behind them, at a respectful distance. Brother followed Vorbis through the tunnels to the artificer's quarter, where forges and workshops clustered around one wide, deep light well. Smoke and fumes billowed up around the hewn rock walls. Vorbis walked directly to a large alcove that glowed red with the light of forge fires. Several workers were clustered around something wide and curved.
There, said Vorbis. What do you think?
It was a turtle. The iron founders had done a pretty good job, even down to the patterning on the shell and the scales on the legs. It was about 8 feet long. Brother heard a rushing noise in his ears as Vorbis spoke.
They speak poisonous gibberish about turtles, do they not? They think they live on the back of a great turtle. Well, let them die on one.
Now Brother could see the shackles attached to each iron leg. A man or a woman could, with great discomfort, lie spread-eagled on the back of the turtle and be chained firmly at the wrists and ankles. He bent down. Yes, there was the firebox underneath. Some aspects of quisition thinking never changed. That much iron would take ages to heat up to the point of pain. Much time, therefore, to reflect on things.
What do you think? Said Vorbis.
A vision of the future flashed across Brother's mind.
Ingenious, he said.
And it will be a salutary lesson for all others tempted to stray from the path of true knowledge, said Vorbis.
When do you intend to, demonstrate it?
I am sure such an occasion will present itself, said Vorbis.
When Brother straightened up, Vorbis was staring at him so intently that it was as if he was reading Brother's thoughts off the back of his head.
And now please leave, said Vorbis. Rest as much as you can, my son.
Brother walked slowly across the place, deep in unaccustomed thought.
Afternoon, your reverence.
You know already?
Cut me own hand off, Dablar beamed over the top of his lukewarm, ice-cold sherbet stand.
Heard it on the grapevine, he said.
Here, have a slab of Clachian Delight, free, on a stick.
The place was more crowded than usual. Even Dablar's hotcakes were selling like hotcakes.
Busy today, said Brother, hardly thinking about it.
Time of the prophet, see, said Dablar, when the great God is manifest in the world. And if you think it's busy now, you won't be able to swing a goat in here in a few days' time.
What happens then?
You're right. You look a bit peaky.
What happens then?
The laws. You know, the Book of Vorbis, I suppose.
Dublar leaned towards Brother.
You wouldn't have a hint, would you? I suppose the great god didn't happen to say anything of benefit to the convenience of food industry.
I don't know. I think he'd like people to grow more lettuce.
Really?
It's only a guess. Dublar grinned evilly.
Ah, yes, but it's your guess. A nod's as good as a poke with a sharp stick to a deaf camel, as they say. I know where I can get my hands on a few acres of well-irrigated land, funnily enough. Perhaps I ought to buy now, ahead of the crowd.
Can't see any harm in it, Mr. Dublar. Dublar sidled closer. This was not hard. Dublar sidled everywhere. Crabs thought he walked sideways.
Funny thing, he said. I mean, Vorbis.
Funny, said Brother.
Makes you think. Even Ossory must have been a man who walked around just like you and me. Got wax in his ears just like ordinary people. Funny thing.
What is?
The whole thing.
Dublar gave Brother another conspiratorial grin and then sold a footsore pilgrim a bowl of hummus that he would come to regret. Brother wandered down to his dormitory. It was empty at this time of day, hanging around dormitories being discouraged in case the presence of the rock-hard mattresses engendered thoughts of sin. His few possessions were gone from the shelf by his bunk. Probably he had a room of his own somewhere, although no one had told him. Brother felt totally lost. He lay down on the bunk just in case, and offered up a prayer to Om. There was no reply. There had been no reply for almost all of his life, and that hadn't been too bad because he'd never expected one. And before, there'd always been the comfort that perhaps Om was listening and simply not deigning to say anything. Now there was nothing to hear. He might as well be talking to himself and listening to himself, like Vorbis. That thought wouldn't go away. Mind like a steel ball, Om had said. Nothing got in or out. So all Vorbis could hear were the distant echoes of his own soul. And out of the distant echoes he would forge a Book of Vorbis, and Brother suspected he knew what the commandments would be. There would be talk of holy wars and blood and crusades and blood and piety and blood. Brother got up feeling like a fool, but the thoughts wouldn't go away. He was a bishop, but he didn't know what bishops did. He'd only seen them in the distance drifting along like earthbound clouds. There was only one thing he felt he knew how to do. Some spotty boy was hoeing the vegetable garden. He looked at Brother in amazement when he took the hoe, and was stupid enough to try to hang on to it for a moment. "I am a bishop, you know," said Brother. "Anyway, you aren't doing it right. Go and do something else." Brother jabbed viciously at the weeds around the seedlings. Only away a few weeks, and already there was a haze of green on the soil. "You're a bishop, for being good. And here's the iron turtle, in case you're bad, because..." There were two people in the desert, and Om spoke to one of them. It had never occurred to Brother like that before. Om had spoken to him. Admittedly, he hadn't said the things that great prophets said he said. Perhaps he'd never said things like that. He worked his way along to the end of the row, then he tidied up the bean vines. Lutse watched Brother carefully from his little shed by the soil heaps. It was another barn. Ern was seeing a lot of barns. They'd started with a cart and invested a lot of time in reducing its weight as much as possible. Gearing had been a problem. He'd been doing a lot of thinking about gears. The ball wanted to spin much faster than the wheels wanted to turn. That was probably a metaphor for something or other. "And I can't get it to go backwards," he said.
"Don't worry," said Simony. "It won't have to go backwards. What about armour?"
Ern waved a distracted hand around his workshop.
"This is a village forge," he said. "This thing is 20 feet long. Zacharos can't make plates bigger than a few feet across. I've tried nailing them on a framework, but it just collapses under the weight."
Simony looked at the skeleton of the steam car and the pile of plates stacked beside it.
"Ever been in a battle, Ern?" he said.
"No, I've got flat feet and I'm not very strong."
"Do you know what a tortoise is?"
Ern scratched his head.
"Okay, the answer isn't a little reptile in the shell, is it? Because you know I know that."
"I mean a shield tortoise. When you're attacking a fortress or a wall, and the enemy is dropping everything he's got on you, every man holds his shield overhead so that it kind of slots into all the shields around him.
can take a lot of weight.
Overlapping, murmured Erne.
Like scales, said Simony. Erne looked reflectively at the cart.
A tortoise, he said.
And the battering ram, said Simony.
Oh, that's no problem, said Erne, not paying much attention. Tree trunk bolted to the frame. Big iron rammer. They're only bronze doors, you say?
Yes, but very big.
Then they're probably hollow, or cast iron bronze plates on wood. That's what I'd do.
Not solid bronze? Everyone says they're solid bronze.
That's what I'd say, too.
Excuse me, sirs.
A burly man stepped forward. He wore the uniform of the palace guards.
This is Sergeant Fergman, said Simony.
Yes, Sergeant.
The doors is reinforced with Clachian steel because of all the fighting in the time of the false prophet Zog, and they opens outwards only, like lock gates on a canal. Do you understand? If you're pushing them, they only locks more firmly together.
How are they opened, then? Said Erne.
The Cenobarch raises his hand, and the breath of God blows them open, said the sergeant.
In a logical sense, I meant.
Oh, well, one of the deacons goes behind a curtain and pulls a lever. But when I was on guard down in the crypts sometimes, there was a room, there was gratings and things. Well, you could hear water gushing.
Hydraulics, said Erne. Thought it would be hydraulics.
Can you get in? Said Simony.
To the room? Why not? No one bothers with it.
Could he make the doors open? Said Simony.
Hmm? Said Erne.
Erne was rubbing his chin reflectively with a hammer. He seemed to be lost in a world of his own.
I said, could Fergman make these hydraulics work?
Hmm? Oh, shouldn't think so, said Erne vaguely.
Could you?
What? Could you make them work?
Oh, probably. It's just pipes and pressures, after all.
Erne was still staring thoughtfully at the steam cart. Simony nodded meaningfully at the sergeant, indicating that he should go away, and then tried the mental interplanetary journey necessary to get to whatever world Erne was in. He tried looking at the cart, too.
How soon can you have it all finished?
Hmm?
I said,
late tomorrow night, if we work through tonight.
But we'll need it for the next dawn. We won't have time to see if it works.
It'll work first time, said Erne.
Really?
I built it. I know about it. You know about swords and spears and things. I know about things that go round and round. It will work first time.
Good. Well, there are other things I've got to do.
Right.
Erne was left alone in the barn. He looked reflectively at his hammer and then at the iron cart. They didn't know how to cast bronze properly here. Their iron was pathetic, just pathetic. Their copper, it was terrible. They seemed to be able to make steel that shattered at a blow. Over the years, the Quisition had weeded out all the good smiths. He'd done the best he could, but...
Just don't ask me about the second or third time, he said quietly to himself.
Vorbis sat in the stone chair in his garden, papers strewn around him.
Well?
The kneeling figure did not look up. Two guards stood over it with drawn swords.
The turtle people, the people are plotting something,
it said, the voice shrill with terror.
Of course they are, of course they are, said Vorbis. And what is this plot?
There is some kind of... When you are confirmed as Cenobiarch, some kind of device, some machine that goes by itself, it will smash down the doors of the temple.
The voice faded away.
And where is this device now? Said Vorbis.
I don't know. They've bought iron from me. That's all I know.
An iron device?
Yes.
The man took a deep breath, half gulp.
People say, the guards say, you have my father in prison, and you might... I plead...
Vorbis looked down at the man.
But you fear, he said, that I might have you thrown into the cells as well. You think I am that sort of person.
You fear that I may think this man has associated with heretics and blasphemers in familiar circumstances.
The man continued to stare fixedly at the ground. Vorbis's fingers curled gently around his chin and raised his head until they were eye to eye.
"What you have done is a good thing," he said.
He looked at one of the guards.
"Is this man's father still alive?"
"Yes, Lord."
"Still capable of walking?"
The Inquisitor shrugged.
"Yes, Lord."
"Then release him this instant, put him in the charge of his dutiful son here, and send them both back home."
The armies of hope and fear fought in the informant's eyes.
"Thank you, Lord," he said.
"Go in peace."
Vorbis watched one of the guards escort the man from the garden. Then he waved a hand vaguely at one of the head inquisitors.
"Do we know where he lives?"
"Yes, Lord."
"Good."
The Inquisitor hesitated.
"And this device, Lord?"
"Orm has spoken to me. A machine that goes by itself, such a thing is against all reason. Where are its muscles? Where is its mind?"
"Yes, Lord."
The Inquisitor, whose name was Deacon Cusp, had got where he was today, which was a place he wasn't sure right now that he wanted to be, because he liked hurting people. It was a simple desire, and one that was satisfied in abundance within the Quisition, and he was one of those who were terrified in a very particular way by Vorbis. Hurting people because you enjoyed it, that was understandable. Vorbis just hurt people because he decided that they should be hurt. Without passion. Even with a kind of hard love. In Cusp's experience, people didn't make things up, ultimately. Not in front of an Inquisitor. Of course, there were no such things as devices that moved by themselves, but he made a mental note to increase the guard.
"However," said Vorbis, "there will be a disturbance during the ceremony tomorrow."
"Lord?"
"I have special knowledge," said Vorbis.
"Of course, Lord."
"You know the breaking strain of sinews and muscles, Deacon Cusp?"
Cusp had formed an opinion that Vorbis was somewhere on the other side of madness. Ordinary madness he could deal with. In his experience, there were quite a lot of mad people in the world, and many of them became even more insane in the tunnels of the Quisition. But Vorbis had passed right through that red barrier and had built some kind of logical structure on the other side. Rational thoughts made out of insane components.
"Yes, Lord," he said. "I know the breaking strain of people."
It was night, and cold for the time of year. Lutze crept through the gloom of the barn, sweeping industriously. Sometimes he took a rag from the recesses of his robe and polished things. He polished the outside of the moving turtle, which loomed low and menacing in the shadows, and he swept his way towards the forge where he watched for a while. It takes extreme concentration to pour good steel. No wonder gods have always clustered around isolated smithies. There are so many things that can go wrong. A slight mismix of ingredients, a moment's lapse. Ern, who was almost asleep on his feet, grunted as he was nudged awake, and something was put in his hands. It was a cup of tea. He looked into the little round face of Lutze.
"Oh," he said. "Thank you. Thank you very much."
Nod. Smile.
"Nearly done," said Ern, more or less to himself. "Just got to let it cool now. Got to let it cool really slowly, otherwise it crystallizes, you see."
Nod. Smile. Nod. It was good tea.
"It's not important, Cast, anyway," said Ern, swaying. "Just the control levers."
Lutze caught him carefully and steered him to a seat on a heap of charcoal. Then he went and watched the forge for a while. The bar of steel was glowing in the mould. He poured a bucket of cold water over it, watched the great cloud of steam spread and disperse, and then put his broom over his shoulder and ran away hurriedly. People to whom Lutze was a vaguely glimpsed figure behind a very slow broom would have been surprised at his turn of speed, especially in a man 6,000 years old who ate nothing but brown rice and drank only green tea with a knob of rancid butter in it. A little way from the citadel's main gates, he stopped running and started sweeping. He swept up to the gates, swept around the gates themselves, nodded and smiled at a soldier who glared at him and then realized that it was only the daft old sweeper, polished one of the handles on the gates, and swept his way by passages and cloisters to Brother's vegetable garden. He could see a figure crouched among the melons. Lutze found a rug and padded back out into the garden where Brother was sitting hunched up with his hoe over his knees. Lutse had seen many agonized faces in his time, which was a longer time than most whole civilizations managed to see. Brothers was the worst. He tugged the rug over the bishop's shoulders.
"I can't hear him," said Brother hoarsely. "It may mean that he's too far away. I keep on thinking that. He may be out there somewhere, miles away."
Lutse smiled and nodded.
"It'll happen all over again. He never told anyone to do anything, or not to do anything. He didn't care."
Lutse nodded and smiled again. His teeth were yellow. They were, in fact, his 200th set.
"He should have cared."
Lutse disappeared into his corner again and returned with a shallow bowl full of some kind of tea. He nodded and smiled and proffered it until Brother took it and had a sip. It tasted like hot water with a lavender bag in it.
"You don't understand anything I'm talking about, do you?" said Brother.
"Not much," said Lutse.
"You can talk?"
Lutse put a wizened finger to his lips.
"Big secret," he said.
Brother looked at the little man. How much did he know about him? How much did anyone know about him?
"You talk to God,"
said Lutse. "How do you know that?"
"Signs. Man who talk to God have difficult life."
"You're right." Brother stared at Lutse over the cup.
"Why are you here?" he said. "You're not Omnian or Ephebian."
"Grew up near Hub. Long time ago. Now Lutse a stranger everywhere he goes. Best way. Learned religion in temple at home. Now go where job is."
"Carting soil and pruning plants?"
"Sure. Never been bishop or high panjandrum. Dangerous life. Always be man who cleans pews or sweeps up behind altar. No one bother useful man. No one bother small man. No one remember name."
"That's what I was going to do, but it doesn't work for me."
"Then find other way. I learn in temple, taught by ancient master. When trouble, always remember wise words of ancient and venerable master."
"What were they?"
"Ancient master say, 'That boy there, what you eating? Hope you brought enough for everybody.' Ancient master say, 'You, bad boy, why you no do homework?' Ancient master say, 'What boy laughing? No tell what boy laughing. Hold dojo, stay in after school.' When remember these wise words, nothing seems so bad."
"What shall I do? I can't hear him."
"You do what you must. I learn anything. It you have to walk it all alone."
Brother hugged his knees.
"But he told me nothing. Where's all his wisdom? All the other prophets came back with commandments."
"Where they get them?"
I suppose they made them up."
"You get them from same place."
"You call this philosophy?"
roared Didactylos, waving his stick. Ern cleaned pieces of the sand mould from the lever.
"Well, natural philosophy," he said.
The stick whanged down on the moving turtle's flanks.
"I never taught you this sort of thing," shouted the philosopher. "Philosophy is supposed to make life better."
"This will make it better for a lot of people," said Ern calmly. "It will help overthrow a tyrant."
"And then?"
said Didactylos.
"And then what?"
"And then you'll take it to bits, will you?"
said the old man.
"Smash it up, take the wheels off, get rid of all those spikes and burn the plans, hmm? When it served its purpose, yes?"
"Well,"
Ern began,
what?
"What if we do keep it? It'll be a deterrent to other tyrants."
"You think tyrants won't build them too?"
"Well, I can build bigger ones," Ern shouted.
Didactylos sagged.
"Yes," he said, "no doubt you can. So that's all right then. My word, and to think I was worrying. And now I think I'll go and have a rest somewhere."
He looked hunched up and suddenly old.
"Master," said Ern. "Don't master me,"
said Didactylos, feeling his way along the barn walls to the door.
"I can see you know every bloody thing there is to know about human nature now.
The great god Om slid down the side of an irrigation ditch and landed on his back in the weeds at the bottom. He righted himself by gripping a root with his mouth and hauling himself over. The shape of Brother's thoughts flickered back and forth in his mind. He couldn't make out any actual words, but he didn't need to, any more than you needed to see the ripples to know which way the river flowed. Occasionally, when he could see the citadel as a gleaming dot in the twilight, he'd try shouting his own mind back as loudly as he could.
"Wait! Wait! You don't want to do that! We can go to Ankh-Morpork, land of opportunity! With my brains and your... with you, the world is our mollusk! Why throw it all away?"
And then he'd slide into another furrow. Once or twice he saw the eagle, forever circling.
"Why put your hand into a grinder? This place deserves Vorbis. Sheep deserve to be led."
It had been like this when his very first believer had been stoned to death. Of course, by then he had dozens of other believers. But it had been a wrench. It had been upsetting. You never forgot your first believer. They gave you shape. Tortoises are not well equipped for cross-country navigation. They need longer legs or shallower ditches. Om estimated that he was doing less than a fifth of a mile an hour in a direct line, and the citadel was at least 20 miles away. Occasionally he made good time between the trees in an olive grove, but that was more than pulled back by rocky ground and field walls. All the time, as his legs whirred, Brother's thoughts buzzed in his head like a distant bee. He tried shouting in his mind again.
"What have you got? He's got an army. You've got an army? How many divisions have you got?"
But thoughts like that needed energy, and there was a limit to the amount of energy available in one tortoise. He found a bunch of fallen grapes and gobbled them until the juice covered his head, but it didn't make a lot of difference. And then there was nightfall. Nights here weren't as cold as the desert, but they weren't as warm as the day. He'd slow down at night as his blood cooled. He wouldn't be able to think as fast, or walk as fast. He was losing heat already. Heat meant speed. He pulled himself up onto an anthill.
"You're going to die! You're going to die!"
And slid down the other side.